We're reading from Luke chapter 12, starting at verse 35. Stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. And be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. If he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left his house to be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Peter said, Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? And the Lord said, Who then is the faithful and wise manager, whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, My master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. And that servant who knew his master's will, but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required. And from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more.
Well, thanks for reading, Emma. And let me add my welcome to Kev's. It's great to see you, especially if this is your first time at Euston, or if you've joined us maybe since the weekend away. You should find an outline of the talk in your service sheet, which you might find helpful for taking notes. As Kev has already said, our theme for this evening really is the return of Jesus. Surely I am coming soon, he tells us. In our theme verse, we've just been singing, haven't we, about him coming on the clouds of heaven to rule over kings and kingdoms. But I wonder how you feel about that in the cold light of day. As you sit in your office tomorrow or attend a seminar next week, doesn't believing in Jesus' return and the new creation seem, well, a bit weird? YouGov actually took a survey on this in 2015. Hopefully the results will be appearing behind me. Personally, I was surprised by how many modern British people do believe that the world will end in some kind of apocalyptic disaster. Almost 70% of us think that that is a likely thing to happen at some point. But at the same time, the idea of Jesus' return is pretty marginal. As you can hopefully see in the pie chart, 37% of people believe that the world might be wiped out in a nuclear war, compared to only 3% that think that some sort of judgment day, whether or not, for what it's worth, that involves the return of Jesus, will bring the world to its end. You'll notice, actually, it's the red, the little red slice. You'll notice it's actually on a par with belief in the possibility of a zombie apocalypse, which you've got to think that was a joke answer for a lot of people. And I guess that pretty much says it. In 21st century Britain, the return of Jesus is more or less on a par with the joke option. But it's not just sceptical Brits, is it, who find the idea of Jesus' return a bit silly? If we're honest, it is probably one of the parts of the Bible's teaching that we Christians find a bit embarrassing. We worry that if we talk about it too much, and then maybe our best case scenario is that our friends will think that we're a bit quaint, a bit weird. But much more likely, they're going to assume that we're one of those lunatics in a sandwich board shouting, the end of the world is nigh. But what Jesus is going to show us this evening is that belief in his return is a basic discipleship issue. Over the last few weeks, Jesus has been showing us what it looks like to follow him down discipleship road, the road he is taking to his death in Jerusalem. We've seen time and again that it is a demanding road to follow. What easy street is constantly beckoning to us. What we'll see today is that we won't continue far down discipleship road if we ditch the return of Jesus. Jesus begins to show us the importance of keeping his return in mind by telling us two stories about the need to remain alert. I've summarized their message on the handout with the heading, "The Master is coming back. Stay awake." The Master is coming back. Stay awake. Now, don't worry. I'm aware that many of us have just come back from an intense and a stretching weekend, and that the idea of staying awake until the end of this talk, let alone the end of the world, might sound like quite an ask. But staying awake is the challenge that the servants in this first story, the one that we heard in verses 35 to 38, need to overcome. They've got the task of waiting up all night so that they can open the door when their master gets home from a late night wedding party. It's crucial that they stay awake because when he arrives, they're going to have to act suddenly. They can't mess around lighting lamps and getting out of their pajamas while he's banging on the front door. But the problem is that they don't know exactly when he'll be coming back. His return will be sudden and unpredictable. As I'm sure many of the students here can tell us, pulling an all-nighter is hard. As the long hours drag on, the temptation is going to get greater and greater to just give up and go to bed. But they need to remain constantly ready for action. If they give up and change into their PJs and switch the lights off, they won't be ready when the master returns. Now, Jesus here, he's talking about the coming of his kingdom. He hasn't really changed the subject from last week's passage. So the kingdom that Jesus says God is going to give us in verse 32 from last week, that's what's going to come suddenly, unpredictably, in all its glory when Jesus returns. Staying awake then, it must mean keeping going, persevering in discipleship road, continuing to seek God's kingdom rather than worrying about food and clothing, continuing to be rich towards God rather than laying up treasure for yourself. Continuing to overcome your fear of other people so that you can bear costly witness to the King. We need to persevere because discipleship road is hard. Jesus has already been clear about that over the last few weeks. It would be much easier for us to seek after the same things that everyone else is seeking. It can look so much more sensible to lay up treasures on earth rather than be rich towards a God that you can't see. So if you haven't already, expect to experience moments, possibly even entire seasons of life, when you are tired of discipleship road. At times when you are tempted to throw in the towel, Jesus wouldn't be telling us about perseverance if we didn't need to hear it. And I hope that you saw in the story that Jesus' emphasis here is on how amazingly worth it will be to stay up like that. Twice Jesus tells us that the servants who are still awake when the master returns are blessed. And verse 37 tells us the most surprising detail of the whole story. "Truly, I say to you, he, the master, will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them." Isn't that the last thing that you would expect to happen when the master gets home? Wouldn't you expect him to have his servants rushing around, plumping up pillows on his bed and filling up the hot water bottle and, I don't know, making a cup of cocoa? Instead, his reward is so staggeringly out of proportion to what they've done and so shockingly against the social norms of the day that it leaves you wondering just who is the servant after all? Maybe if you're honest, you're on the edge of giving up on Discipleship Road this evening. I think it's encouraging to know that Jesus knows there will be times when we feel like that. Tough as it is, we need to remember in those moments that Jesus is coming back. At some point, we don't know when, he will finally bring his kingdom in all its glory. We need to allow the joy, the blessing we will experience then to keep us pressing on, seeking the kingdom without losing heart. Personally, I think one of the things I find most daunting about the whole idea of keeping going as a Christian is how long we might have to do it. We're generally a youngish crowd here, and it's possible, isn't it, that we'll have to persevere for decades, depending, of course, on when the master comes back. Certainly, the servants in this story have to stay up a long time. The second watch that is mentioned in verse 38 doesn't start until midnight. And the third one goes all the way till dawn. Perhaps they were eager and excited at 10:30. But as 1 a.m. went past, then 2 a.m., then 3 a.m., might they be tempted to think it was all a waste of time? Could something like that happen to us? As we move from maybe the idealism and the energy that so many of us have in our 20s through the decades ahead, could we end up quietly giving up on seeking God's kingdom as the mortgage and anxieties about our kids and office politics and the thought of our pension pushes it into second place? Jesus wants us to know that only a constant eye on his return and the lavish generosity he will show us in his kingdom will prevent that from happening. And if we do feel ourselves drifting off, we should be aware there is another side to what Jesus is saying here. Because Jesus paints us another picture in verse 39, this time about how not to get burgled. Coming up on the screen now, this is Didier. Didier owns an e-cigarette shop in Belgium, and he is the at the heart of what is probably my favorite news story from 2018. You see, one day in late October, at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a gang of six young men came into Didier's shop and demanded that he hand over the cash from the till. "No, mate, no. You don't want to do that," says Didier. "There's only about €1,000 in there anyway. No, what you want to do is if you come back at closing time, right, loads of people buy stuff on their way home during the rush hour. So there's going to be way more money in the till if you come back at closing time. It's about 6:30. Well, they see his logic, and so they left. And Didier promptly got on the phone to the police. You really think they're coming back? Like, seriously?" says the officer on the line. I think they will, yeah," says Didier. Well, the police weren't convinced until Didier got on the phone to say that the same group actually came back at 5:30 in the afternoon. He says, "No, guys, come on, you want to buy a watch or something? I said 6:30, 6:30. "Sorry, boss, sorry." Off they go. So it's only on the third time that they come back that armed officers are waiting to arrest them. They have been dubbed the worst robbers in Belgium. Now, Jesus' point here is that burglars don't generally operate in that way. By and large, the more professional ones have worked out that there are certain inconveniences to booking an appointment in advance. And so they generally try and make it a surprise instead. If there's no tip-off in advance like that, well, the only way to avoid getting burgled is constant vigilance. So there is a sting in the tale of Jesus' story here. There's a fantastic reward in store for those who manage to stay awake. But for those who are caught napping, it seems that there's the risk of serious loss. And perhaps it's the mention of that risk that gets Peter asking his question in verse 41. Did you see it? Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? Is this a question about how Christians need to be sure they're not caught out? Or is this really about people who aren't Christians and need to get ready? Jesus' answer to Peter is another parable about a shocking example of not taking this teaching to heart. The message of this one, I've said on the handout, is the master is coming back. Stay faithful. The master is coming back. Stay faithful. This time the test for the servant is not about whether he can stay up all night. It's about what he does when no one is looking. Picture the scene with me. The CEO is going away on sabbatical. She's not going to be in the office for several months. She's picked a new chairman for the board to manage the company while she's away. She's given her instructions so that all of the company's projects remain on track. And off she goes. Fast forward a few weeks. What do you find in the office? Is the new boss getting on with his work and making sure that all his colleagues are taken care of and the business is still coming along nicely? Well, if so, all well and good. In fact, this second story also has a ridiculously generous reward at the end for that employee. But Jesus gives most of his airtime to focusing on the example of a manager who reacts quite differently. One who thinks to himself, this sabbatical is going on for ages. There's no need to rush that project. We've got months to finish it. Well, maybe she isn't ever going to come back. Perhaps she's enjoying the sabbatical so much, she's going to take early retirement. The weeks go by. The other people in the office start to notice that the boss is clocking out earlier and earlier, and his lunch breaks are getting longer and longer. The project deadline is starting to slip. Company funds are going missing. And there's worrying stories around the water cooler of workplace bullying, harassment, and non-disclosure agreements. But one day there is a surprise that throws the whole office into confusion. The CEO returns early from her sabbatical. She's read a fantastic new idea in a management consultancy manual, and she is keen to put it into practice straight away. Time's up for the abusive manager. Furious, the CEO fires him on the spot and gets the legal team to start preparing a lawsuit. Soon enough, the police are involved, and the deputy is facing a lifetime in prison and a ruined reputation. A full internal inquiry is launched to find out who knew what, when, and what they did about it. The abusive manager is a particularly shocking example of someone who thinks that they can act like the return of the master isn't going to happen at all. Or at least if it does, so far into the future that there's no need to worry about it now. It's a picture of someone who arrogantly assumes that they can get away with doing whatever they like for as long as they like, because there'll never be any accountability for their actions in the future. And if the answer to Peter's question isn't clear enough yet, verses 47 and 48 should be a stark wake-up call to anyone who thinks that this parable is really about someone else. Look at them with me. Sorry. And that servant who knew his master's will but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required. And from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. We already heard, actually, towards the start of this whole sermon series, what a privilege it is to know what we know, to see what we see, to have heard about the coming of God's kingdom so clearly? Did we also realize it's a responsibility? Millions of people in London know nothing really about what it looks like to seek God's kingdom. As far as they're concerned, Jesus' return, you might remember, is about as likely as a zombie apocalypse. And they base their lives around that thinking. Have you ever thought that Jesus might take a more favorable view of them on the day when he returns than he will of us if we know about the kingdom but choose to live in the same way as them? Jesus is coming. Look busy. It is a slogan from a popular poster that I think came out about 10 years ago on Pinterest. Apparently one Pinterest user has collected together his favorite 105 iterations of it, which I thought was impressively dedicated. This particular one is one of the less offensive ones, which is why I picked it. You can buy this one not only as a poster, but also as a T-shirt, a mug, a hoodie, and even a phone case. And as a slogan, it's usually being used as a way of poking fun at the idea of Jesus' return, as if we can live as we please for now, so long as maybe we could fake it well enough when he returns, to convince him that we've been seeking his kingdom all along. But this parable is here to tell us that the idea of Jesus' return is no joke. It's meant to be a terrible warning of the danger of making light of Jesus' return. I'm thinking you can get away with doing whatever you want. If we slip into a frame of mind maybe where we theoretically believe Jesus will return one day, but we make our practical day-to-day choices as though that will never happen, we will quickly abandon faithful service on discipleship road. Jesus wants us to view this as a real threat to our discipleship. I know personally that as we try and apply this sort of teaching, one of the most common difficulties that we face is the way that Jesus' return often feels hard to imagine, distant, a little bit unreal. Jesus says it needs to play an active role in our decision making, in who we trust and what we fear, and in what we're seeking in life in the first place. Jesus wouldn't have told this story if there weren't going to be people who, when he returns, are judged and put with the unfaithful because they made the fatal error of thinking, my master is delayed in coming, and base their lives on that decision. I'm aware this is a really heavy passage to end the weekend with, and if its message doesn't make us a bit uncomfortable, we haven't been listening. But this is a loving warning from a saviour who set his face to die for us. A warning given in the name of the Father who loves us and cares for us. Jesus didn't tell these parables just to frighten us. He told them because he wants us to keep going and inherit the kingdom. He told them because he wants us to repent if we think maybe that we have strayed away from seeking his kingdom. He's told them because he knows that in 2019, just like in any other time period for that matter, it will seem bonkers to believe in the return of Jesus. He told them because he knows that we won't keep going on discipleship road without his return in our minds. The master is coming back. He's bringing fabulous, over-the-top rewards for his faithful servants who keep on waiting for him. He's bringing dreadful judgment for those who are unfaithful. Will we be ready when he returns?